CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This is the Hash Podcast. Stay informed with the latest on Bitcoin, ETH, the Metaverse, Web3, and more. All on the Hash for your ears. You're listening to the CoinDesk Podcast Network.
Hey there, welcome to The Hash. I'm Zach Seward. You're watching us on CoinDesk TV. You're listening to us on the CoinDesk Podcast Network. You are joined by Jen Sanasi and Will Foxley. We're here to get you through the news of the day, starting with me, Fidelity, preparing to apply for a spot Bitcoin ETF as well. A source tells The Block. Bitcoin pumped a little bit on the news, it should be noted, and this is a continuation of a recent trend where big old financial institutions are trying to get a spot Bitcoin ETF into the hands of U.S. consumers. Really interesting to see a lot of momentum around the Bitcoin ETF when previously that conversation had been quite dead. What do they know? What do they know about the particular timing here? That really is the interesting thing. I'm going to throw it straight to Will. I saw him raising his hands in jubilation now that the institutions are back on the Bitcoin ETF train.
Let's go.
Fidelity is here. What do you think, Will?
I'm loving it. Fidelity has $4.5 trillion of assets under management. This, of course, follows up on the BlackRock ETF, which CoinDesk broke, and a few other companies last week re-upped their ETF bids, which have been swatted down left and right by the SEC over the last few years. But it is ETF season, and we are pumping on the news. We love that. Bitcoin's over 30K, right? I think it is, right? It's over 30K. Pretty sure it is. That's great news, guys. Everyone should be all smiles today. Fidelity itself has been a longtime Bitcoin proponent, or at least interested in Bitcoin. A lot of like the more prominent people in the Bitcoin space actually came from Fidelity. Like Amanda Fabiano, who now runs mining over at Galaxy Digital, or Nick Carter, who's now an investor at Cast Island Ventures. A few other people, the Fidelity gang, as they're well known. So Fidelity throwing their hat into the ring would not surprise me. Now, to the media side of this, this is a source, right? So we have one lone source from The Block, similar to the CoinDesk article, right? Where CoinDesk had a few sources and was able to put this together. So I'm interested to see, one, if this is confirmed, which as of right now, we do not have any confirmation or any comment from Fidelity. And two, later, how this comes out, right? Like, who's the partner or who's the person who sort of leaked this? Oftentimes, we never find out who this is. Maybe a few years later, we do find out. It's whispered in circles. But normally, people who have a financial incentive are the ones who are leaking this information. So we'll see what happens there. Jen?
Yeah, so Fidelity is also one of the investors in EDX Markets. That's the exchange that launched, I think it was last week. They have Bitcoin, Ether, Litecoin, and Bitcoin Cash available for institutional investors. And the markets have just really been reacting to this like very institutional news. Like I said yesterday, now that Fidelity's thrown their hat in the ring, you just have to feel like somebody knows something the rest of us don't. So Fidelity has applied for an ETF before. I believe that some of the other players that filed after BlackRock also have filed before. And now we have them filing the second time right after BlackRock files. It just feels very bullish. But then again, that's just a feeling. There is no information to back any of that up. It's very possible that the SEC does not let these applications go through. I love what's happening in the markets. I love the conversations that this is spurring. So I hope it happens. Our markets guest on First Mover this morning said that he predicts the next bull cycle to start if one of the ETFs does get approved. He was saying if it does get approved, he's thinking that Bitcoin will hit $40,000 by the end of the year. I think all of the bullish people probably are sharing similar sentiment, but I'd hate to be the Debbie Downer. I think it's important to zoom out and look at what's going on in the macro environment before we say the next bull cycle is coming, because all of these ETFs are being filed. And the last thing I will say before I hand this off to you again, Will, is Canada has had an ETF for a really long time. I need to say it every time, you know, we've been there in Canada. And so maybe that's why I can share a dance with you, but maybe I'm not that excited.
We're not interested in the Canada shilling this morning.
No, nope.
We just want to talk about Bitcoin. Okay, really quick, I want to go over to Eric Balcunas. I think I just butchered his last name, but he's an ETF reporter over at Bloomberg. He's sort of been covering this whole space, right? Because normally ETFs are pretty boring. It's like, oh, congrats, you raised like a half percentage point today. That's basically what they're covering. But when a Bitcoin ETF comes to town, it gets really exciting because you get to interact with crypto Twitter. And he's been talking about it for quite a little bit because of what happened with CoinDesk breaking the news about the BlackRock ETF. Right now, he's noticing that there might be a higher percentage chance that a Bitcoin ETF does go through because of the litigation between Grayscale and the SEC. Grayscale has been suing the SEC, trying to allow a conversion of its trust into an ETF. And after oral hearings and arguments, the Bloomberg team assigned a 70% chance that that ETF does go through because of the courts. Now, with this information that Fidelity and BlackRock and others are pushing forward, he's thinking that you might see a chance that the SEC backpedals on their argument with Grayscale by allowing one of these other ETFs to go through, which is really interesting anecdote here. Like, if that does happen, that would be pretty fascinating to see the SEC be like, okay, we don't care about this argument in court anymore because we're just going to let these other ETFs fly through. And then the whole market opens up all at once. So that is one thing to keep an eye on. Zach?
Yeah, and it becomes sort of like a loss in name only, right? It's a way for the SEC to save face on the Grayscale suit. Because, you know, him, again, Bloomberg ETF analysts, they do this all the time. They say there's like a 70% shot that the Grayscale wins its feud with the SEC. If the SEC can act and say, okay, well, we've approved a Bitcoin ETF, this point is moot. It doesn't really become like a loss in court in a way that could tarnish maybe the political reputation of Gary Gensler, who seems to have greater aspirations. I think with the Fidelity one, and obviously this detail is not yet known, but it really comes down to this market surveillance sharing agreement, right? The surveillance sharing agreement with the BlackRock application is really key for assuaging a lot of the SEC's data concerns around spot Bitcoin price manipulation. If the Fidelity application has some similar language about surveillance sharing, I think that could be a deciding factor as to which one gets approved and which ones continue to languish. So it's going to be interesting to see, I guess, when Fidelity comes out or if this application gets filed later today or in the coming days, what the specifics are, such that we have a better understanding of which of this new crop of applications is most likely to win approval. So we'll have to see what happens. But yeah, interesting to see another big, big name come into the space with this application.
All right, we are going off to the EU to talk about banking regulation. So stick with me while I set this up. The EU has secured a political deal on tougher bank capital rules, and this includes for crypto assets. The deal, which was announced on Twitter, introduced sweeping and controversial changes to several aspects of the banking sector. So what's the crypto angle? All right. The statement confirmed that the deal includes a transitional prudential regime for crypto assets. There are no further details there. But the Basel Committee on Banking Supervision, which is the international standard setter, and they're currently setting up these like international rules, have taken the toughest stance on this. And they are saying that they would require banks to issue a euro of capital for each euro of Bitcoin or Ether. So a lot to set up there. Will, I'm going to toss this one off to you. Those are pretty tough rules when it comes to banks interacting with crypto. What do you make of legislation?
Yeah, I read this article and then I read it again and then I read it a third and a fourth time because it took a while to parse through it. And not any shade at the reporter, just the fact that there's a lot of big words in this article. So if you're going to read it, sit down for a little bit. I think the biggest point here is basically that they're trying to figure out the legislation for these digital assets in the traditional financial community. And it's really, really difficult. Like, we talk about the MiCA laws, right? And those were sort of like easy things to grab, right? They talked about like stablecoin reserves. They talked about wallets. They didn't get into some of the heavier topics that are out there. They're going to do that later. They're punting on it for right now. We'll get to it later. Now, this topic, slightly different, but I think I see it in the same way. We want to be conservative with digital assets. If you're a traditional community or you're in the government, you want to be really conservative with these things. So that's why they're doing one-to-one reserves. Basically saying like, if you have Bitcoin in a product, well, you need to have a dollar equivalent within some sort of reserve somewhere else to protect any sort of investor out there. And that makes sense, right? And that actually sort of fits the ethos of Bitcoin, right? We want to have one-to-one reserves. We've seen a lot of different companies fail over the years, FTX, because they didn't do that, right? They didn't have the correct backing. They were misappropriating funds. So I think a lot of people will like this. Now, the downside of it, of course, is the capital efficiency, right? So if you want to be able to deploy capital efficiently, well, you want to have some sort of reserve that is a little bit more risky. Like if you do have like a full default on everything or you're insolvent, you're not able to pay everyone. But if you are out there a little bit more on the edge, then you can use capital more efficiently and like loan it out to more people, have more products. So that's the downside here. That's even noted in the article a little bit where they're talking about like, we're not expecting a price pump from any of these banks or anyone buying a Bitcoin or Ether or anything like that in a product, because you're always going to have that capital reserve there, which sort of acts as a restraint on the demand side.
I'm just going to add some more information here. So like, I'm also not surprised by how conservative this is. These rules were actually meant to prevent another global financial crisis. And now the crypto aspect has been added to them. And I think we can understand why they would add that. Like, Will, you just brought up the fallout from FTX, which we're still kind of dealing with. Then we had the banking crisis in the US that started with SVB. I can speak English today, I promise, that trickled through to the EU. Then we had the forced takeover of Credit Suisse by UBS. And so I think these rules make sense. I think it makes sense that this is how they're talking about crypto in this document. And maybe as the industry matures, they can become a little bit more lenient, or as we learn from how banks operate with crypto and as we recover from this kind of disaster that's happened over the last year, they can become more lenient. But I'm not surprised at how conservative we are starting with here. Zach?
It's easy to forget that we're not that far removed from a pretty major banking crisis in the US and elsewhere, right? So a lot of people are taking these issues far more seriously. You know, I think on a podcast, I think it was like Meltem Demirs was saying, you know, this is all relates to crypto and digital assets being just this big hot ball of money that can move easily across the world into different places, right? So these capital requirements to make sure that these banks are properly insulated from what remains a more risky sector of the financial world makes a ton of sense. I guess it's a good thing. Basically, my reading of the story is that they were trying to make it prohibitively inefficient for these banks to operate in the space. So the fact that they brokered at least some sort of degree of malleability and flexibility with what kind of capital requirements are required to be on hand, I guess is good for the continued institutionalization of Bitcoin and crypto itself. So banks, man, they're crazy. I don't know what to say beyond that, but Jen, you get the last word here.
I've been all tongue twisted up with all these big words. Will, I think I saw your hand go up. Will, you take it away. We can't.
That wasn't really a hand up. That was more like a, what you going to do hand, you know? Like you're responding to Zach there. What you going to do about the banks, right? They got their thing.
Nothing. Banks are going to bank.
There's like that meme. There's like that meme where it's like, banks are a scam, keep money in crypto. And then the crypto's a scam, keep money in banks. And it's like the nervous guy doesn't know which red button to push. I feel like Elon Musk tweeted that.
That's me. That's my anxiety.
Hard to say. Really hard to say.
We should be gold bucks.
That's it. No more gold. Gold bucks. What a Peter Schiff over here. Come on now, Will. You're killing me.
Let's go over to Robinhood land, talk about sad news there. Robinhood is laying off about 7% of their staff, according to a Wall Street Journal article. This comes, of course, after they have delisted a few tokens that are named in a few SEC lawsuits. The announcements were made earlier in the month, but they are being delisted this evening at 7 p.m. So if you have any of these tokens, they are being forced liquidated, turned into dollars, which will then sit in your Robinhood account. You are no longer able to hold them. The layoff news, of course, a little bit bigger. This is, I believe, their third round of layoffs. The app became pretty ubiquitously used among a lot of people who are interested in crypto over the last 2 years. A lot of people trading Dogecoin, of course, on top of Robinhood. Since then, however, about trading volumes have fallen by about 50%, leading to layoffs. Jen, I'm going to throw the story over to you. I think this is the story that we've seen with, well, it is the story we've seen with most crypto exchanges having some of the lowest volumes since 2019. Though this app is more forward-facing to a lot of ordinary retail consumers. So I actually expected volumes to be like a little bit healthier than they are.
Yeah, so I think Zach said this on the show before. So the tokens that they're delisting today are Polygon, Solana, and ADA. And I think if we think about the retail customer, there may be, especially not in this market, looking for those types of tokens. Or maybe they're going after the Bitcoins and the Ethers of the world and experimenting with some of the altcoins, but not just like kind of aping into them. And if they are, maybe they're doing that on other platforms. And so I look at Robinhood. And I look at their story and their history with the SEC, trying to get registration, not being able to get it after 16 months, listing these tokens, now seeing the SEC going after Binance and Coinbase, listing them in those lawsuits. I just think that like it's a good business decision for Robinhood to say like, okay, there's not a lot of people trading these tokens, not a lot of people buying these tokens. Let's delist them for now. Maybe they're going to bring them back later when there's more regulatory clarity. On the layoff side of things, I hate to be like the Grim Reaper on the show today and keep talking about a recession, but this is another, you know, I think business decision that Robinhood probably had to make. They didn't take it lightly, but to survive the next year in this industry and in the broader tech industry, I just think it makes sense to reduce your workforce if you can. I think if we head into a recession, there are not going to be many new users using products like Robinhood. And so I think maybe they are just bracing for what's ahead. Zach?
Yeah, it makes sense. And I don't think these are causally linked, right? I don't think it's like, oh, the tokens are being delisted and oh, that's what's leading to job cuts. Clearly, there are bigger issues systemically in the macroeconomic landscape that probably indicate why volumes are down significantly. As it relates to crypto, you know, price go down, interest go down, trading volume go down, users go down. And I think probably those brands that are most far out into the mainstream witness that most pointedly, right? Robinhood certainly being chief among them. So the fact that the crypto options on the platform are being limited, you know, it just kind of speaks to the fact that they don't want that smoke with Gary Gensler. They don't want to be the next SEC lawsuit. They do not want that fight. So they're saying, hey, out of an abundance of caution, as much as we hate to do it, we're delisting these tokens. We're liquidating your positions and you have cash now. It is kind of ultimately a self-custody story, I think, right? These highly custodial platforms acting in their interest, not necessarily yours. And I think crypto, the way it works in terms of on-chain custody, is sort of very different from what this picture is currently playing out as. So it is interesting, again, to see you know, the tale of sort of highly custodial fintech, like crypto gateways, acting against the ethos of decentralized crypto in the first place. But hey, you can't fault them. They're a business. They don't want to get in trouble with the law, and they're just trying to act accordingly. So we'll see this play out potentially on some other platforms. Who knows? But yeah, a lot of platforms in the space seem to be taking these claims, you know, not proven, not supported by law, but claims that these tokens are securities. You know, they're acting first rather than potentially winding up in a fight of their own with the SEC while it's on the warpath. Will, last thoughts on this?
Yeah, I want to go back to the point you just made, which is they don't want the smoke with the SEC. And I think that sort of points back to the SEC's whole strategy here, right? They're going to bring up a lawsuit against a few exchanges. They're going to point out a few tokens in that lawsuit. And then before the lawsuit even goes to court, guess what? All these other exchanges have delisted the tokens affiliated with the lawsuit. All those tokens start to have liquidity dry up, as a lot of the capital that'd be interested in these tokens does reside in the US or with US citizens. Before you know it, you don't really have to worry about enforcing against these token projects, right? These foundations are all over the world. They have developers all over the world. And though they want the US capital to be able to pump the token price, if you just go after the exchanges, it really can solve all your problems if you're a regulator there. So expect to see more of this, especially if this Coinbase one does to continue to move through. I was actually surprised, but there was only a few tokens listed in the Coinbase lawsuit with the SEC. There's a lot of tokens on Coinbase. There's a lot of tokens on Binance as well. And I somewhat expected to see just like pages of ticker names to be included. But they only included a few. And of those few, we're already seeing people delist them on different exchanges. But Jen, I think you have the last story for the day.
I have the last story. I just want to say, Zach, I love that you brought up the self-custody angle, because there's so many self-custody solutions popping up in parallel with this story. And I think it'll be interesting to watch how the two stories pan out. But let's talk about decentralized social media here. Decentralized social media app Domus is expected to be delisted from the App Store. This is according to Domus founder William Casserin. Casserin tweeted that they're getting removed from the store even after updating the app to comply with rules and make it clear that their tipping feature is not there to sell digital content. We have a clip of the CEO from Domus explaining how the feature works that was done before this story broke.
We just utilize the Lightning Network. So one thing we do is we can put Lightning addresses in your profile, and then clients integrate a little Lightning button where you click it, and it just sends Bitcoin over Lightning. So that was it's just kind of trivial to do, because with Bitcoin, you don't have to ask permission to do integrations or anything. You just kind of can just build on top of it. So, you know, as a Bitcoiner, I worked on Bitcoin Core and I worked on Lightning nodes, and it was natural to me just to add that into a social network.
All right. A little bit of back and forth here between Domus and Apple. It seems like the Apple versus Web3 saga is continuing through this story. Zach, what do you make of Domus potentially getting delisted?
Yeah, Apple is a huge gatekeeper here, and they're no friend of crypto. They are, I think, cautious of, you know, promoting outright scams and things that can hurt their users, but they're extremely cautious at the expense of projects that seek to do good and find ways to transfer money around the world that doesn't really rely on some of the intermediaries that can be trusted, etc. So yeah, Apple remains sort of that, 800-pound gorilla in the room for a lot of apps seeking to get user traction, right? You want to fish where the fish are. You want to make sure that your app is in front of people in the biggest app storefront in the world. And yet for a lot of these ones that touch crypto, they're not able to do that because it doesn't comport with Apple's rules. So I think Bitcoiners may not be ideologically aligned with this particular project, but when you hear Solana talk about its visions for making a phone that does an end run around the Apple App Store, in which, according to Solana's founders, you know, crypto isn't treated as a second class citizen, stories like this start to really put meat on the bones of why that's a compelling pitch. Because not only are they outright banning certain apps that touch crypto, there is that 30% cut that they take for sales, say through an NFT purchase that was facilitated by an app. So there's sort of, I think, increasingly compelling argument for why some of these alternative systems probably should be created at the hardware level. But this is, I think, again, a continuation of a trend where Apple is sort of not the most friendly gatekeeper when it comes to some of these crypto-powered apps. But hey, such is the way of Tim Apple.
Tim Apple. Yeah, we saw Jack Dorsey tweeting about this yesterday. He's a fan of Noster. He's given a lot of money to Noster for development of the project. And I think he's a prolific zapper on Noster. I think the issue here mainly was around the fact that you can basically send tips on Noster via the Lightning Network to unlock certain content or to tip for content. And there's a dispute between Apple, who said that this was basically a hidden cost within the App Store that they needed to receive money for. And then Noster itself, which was saying, no, this is not some sort of extra payment program within it. This is literally just a tipping feature, which Twitter had at one time as well, right? And I think with the Lightning Network aspect, Apple cannot get that 30% tax that they want, right? It's a peer-to-peer network, even on the Lightning level. So it's difficult for them to be able to get that money. And I guess Noster didn't want to get rid of that feature. And I think it's a pretty key component of why they built it. So they had to get rid of it. That being said, you could still use this product on browser or on Android. So it still exists. I am interested to see how this survives over the long run. There's a lot of different Web3 products or just even Bitcoin products that are trying to be the next social movement away from Twitter. And normally they've been relegated to the dustbin. This one had some staying power and has had some interest from people like Jack Dorsey. So maybe it can survive what's going on here with Apple. Jen?
Apparently, Domus, so the app we're talking, just in case anyone's confused, the app we're talking about that runs on Noster, they went back and they created an update to submit that would allegedly comply with these rules that Apple sent them. And it made it very clear that the tip was just for the creator, not for paying for digital content. And their argument now is that they've fixed that, but they're still getting deplatformed. I think that I don't know what's going on between the two of them. We can only say what is in the documentation and what both Apple and Damas is saying. But I think at the end of the day, Apple also wants to protect their business model, right? And any threat to that, they have the power to say, like, actually, you can't operate in our store. And they have every right to do that because they are a private business. But I know we only have 30 seconds here. I watched the BlackBerry movie the other day, and I have such a broad, crazy question. But could a decentralized solution deplatform Apple the way that they just kind of blew BlackBerry out of the water? 20 seconds. What do you guys think?
Perhaps. Well, we all know that Canada really took the L on BlackBerry.
We so really took the L. We were winning Waterloo. For a long time. And then just all
5 seconds
went to crap.
All right. That was great. Thank you so much. We'll wrap this thing. Zach, Jen, Will, signing off. Bye.
You've been listening to The Hash on the CoinDesk Podcast Network. We would like to hear from you. If you have any questions or comments, please reach out to us at podcasts@coindesk.com, subject line, The Hash, or leave us a review on your favorite podcast player. Thanks for listening.
Have you ever wondered how to say good morning in Italian? Or what is goodbye in French? You can ask Alexa. Just say, what is happy birthday in German? Or how do you say hello in Japanese? Do you want to know how to say I love you in Spanish? Ask Alexa and start learning a new language today.